State Representative Greg Amore, welcome to the Publix Radio.
Thank you, Ian. Happy to be here.
You are serving your fifth term as a state representative, as a Democrat from East Providence. Why are you planning to announce a run next week for Secretary of State?
I've had a great experience in the General Assembly. It's been the honor of my professional life, other than being a teacher. And I think I've helped, along with my colleagues, improve the lives of Rhode Islanders. I've always had a sincere interest in civic engagement. I taught civics and government, U.S. history at East Providence High School for 26 years. I still do on occasion when needed. And, you know, I look at the Secretary of State's office as the civic engagement officer of the state. So the skill set matches up. Obviously, there's a opening in the seat with Secretary Gobea moving on as being term limited and running for governor. So I think this is the right time, and obviously the skill set matches up. But I also watched during the election of 2020 how important the secretaries of state were in our country at large, and three or four of them in particular who stood fast and did not buckle to political pressure and really made the difference in certifying the 2020 election.
Tell us more about your vision for the Secretary of State's office. If you win election, what are the most consequential ways in which you would be different from the current Secretary of State, Nelly Gorbea, or similar to her?
Well, I think the Secretary has done a tremendous job. Her goal was to make the office user-friendly, modernize it, make sure that the lobbyist roles were clean, modernizing the technology and equipment for elections. I think she's done a tremendous job there. A lot of the Secretary of State's office does not get the attention it deserves, and the staff there is tremendous. I know the staff there works tremendously hard. Rob Rock, Melissa Husband. My primary focus, obviously, all of the aspects of the officer are important, but my primary focus would be civic engagement. I think it's tremendously important to celebrate the idea of voting, and we should celebrate voting like we do other holidays, Cinco de Mayo, or whatever it might be. There should be that celebratory nature around voting, since it's the most fundamental right of our democracy. So I would like to get into the schools, get onto the university campuses, get into neighborhoods, and engage people about what their vote means and how important it is, voter registration efforts. Those are the kind of things that inspire me. I know that in my years dealing with students, that engagement, if it happens early on, will continue throughout their adult life. And I think once you get somebody to the voting booth, and once you get them connected to the idea that that vote can make a difference, they're a lifetime voter after that. And so those are the kind of things that inspire me. I'm inspired by the fact that so many voted last time out. We set a record in Rhode Island, and I think we can expand upon that. But this is not a, you know, public service announcement way to get to people. I think you have to go to where people are and engage them. And like I said, that can be the high schools, the campuses, the community centers, the senior centers, wherever that might be.
Well, as you say, there was tremendous interest in voting in the midst of the pandemic in 2020. Early voting seemed to work really well, gave voters more of an opportunity to cast their ballots at their convenience. Despite that, the legislature has been unwilling to put in place for next year some of those same measures that proved so effective in 2020. What's your explanation for that?
Yeah, it's disappointing. I'm the second co-sponsor on the Let Rhode Island Vote Act bill. And I know that the measures are very popular amongst the public. The public is overwhelmingly in support of early voting, overwhelmingly in support of making voting easier, overwhelmingly in support of the drop boxes, the mail ballot situation. So, and I think my colleagues are as well. It's hard to explain why we couldn't move on that or why we haven't moved on it. But I will tell you that I'll spend my time when the session resumes, whenever that might be, or in the new session in January, to push that as a priority, an early in the session priority, or if we do return in the fall, a priority at that point.
Do you see any connection between the legislature not acting on that in the past session and how Senate President Dominic Ruggiero had a relatively close challenge from a progressive challenger in 2020, and perhaps the Senate leadership is thinking that early voting works more for the benefit of progressives?
I think there are concerns in both chambers. I wouldn't narrow it down to a specific race, but I do know this. The numbers indicate that no one political group benefits from early voting or voting by mail. I think an organized campaign, a good candidate, a good message will get a vote out no matter what that method is. So there's no proof of the fact that progressives get more voters out than conservatives if there's a good solid campaign and a good solid candidate. And we see that across the country. I mean, Florida is a great example of a Republican state and becoming more and more Republican that up until this last election had used mail balloting beyond any other state that it wasn't the way to vote, like in Washington. And that was predominantly Republican voters. So I don't think there's an ideology that matches up with making voting easier. And I'm going to try to make that case as we go forward.
You mentioned how one positive aspect of the pandemic was how voting was way up in Rhode Island. One of the downsides in different parts of the country is how voting officials have faced death threats, conspiracy theories, legal action for minor mistakes. And, you know, this seems like some of the hangover from the Trump era, what Trump's supporters see as a disputed election, when in fact the election was not really disputed. The outcome was very clear. What do you think we should do about this as a nation?
Yeah, it's dangerous, right? I mean, I think that's the first thing we have to acknowledge, that when the voting system is questioned, when elections are questioned, especially without evidence, and there is no evidence here. We saw the president's own attorney general, the president's own selected Homeland Security czar in charge of the election, say that this was the most secure election in regard to the Homeland Security. And in regard to Bob Barr, said he saw no widespread fraud. So that information has to get out there. We have a serious issue in this country with misinformation, and I think there's an area where the Secretary of State's office can get engaged once again. I think we have to educate the public as to what is legitimate information and where those sources are, and how to critically think about those and make our own decisions. And that's what we try to do as teachers. And I think we have to do that on a larger scale. But it is dangerous when we question the validity of elections, because that's the foundation of our democracy. So, I'm an optimistic person by nature. And I think one of the reasons I am is I spend so much time with young people. I'm a history teacher. The nation has gone through ebbs and flows in regard to political strife. We've had issues. We've had civil war. We've had civil rights issues. We've had serious debates in this country where we've bounced back, where things have normalized and stabilized. And I think it takes leaders and it takes people in the communities to sit down one-on-one and talk to people about what is real, what is solid information, and ask them to critically think about it. Now, unfortunately, it's hard work, but it happens just like any other organization effort happens. It happens one person at a time.
Another contentious issue is voter ID. Sometimes people scratch their heads that an overwhelmingly blue state like Rhode Island has a voter ID law. Do you support or oppose that law?
So, I wrote a column for the local newspaper before I was elected, and there's probably two or three columns that talk about how I'm opposed to the voter ID law in Rhode Island. I think that the attitude has shifted a little bit on voter ID. Even Stacey Abrams in Georgia and Senator Warnock have talked about the idea that they're not opposed to voter ID. In fact, they both supported the Manchin bill, but that they're opposed to restrictive voter ID. And I think even if you look at the polling of Democrats, that those numbers are in the high 60s now in favor of some identification, maybe expanding that identification, making sure, like we do in Rhode Island, that there's a provisional ballot available to folks so that they know their vote can be counted. I didn't see a need for it at the time, but I will tell you, in Rhode Island, I have not seen what I predicted would be disenfranchisement. I think the attitudes and the narrative has shifted on voter ID. I think we can do it in a responsible way, expand what is used for voter ID. And once again, register people where they are. If people touch government in any way, any type of government, like we do at the DMV, they should have the opportunity to register to vote and perhaps use additional forms of identification to prove who they are. But if they're in a government agency, in a system, that identification is already taken care of itself. And they can do that in that way. So I think we should expand the opportunity to register in that way. And then, you know, providing ID as we do now has not presented a serious problem, but we can't expand that for sure.
Rhode Island's current Secretary of State, Nelly Gorbea, has clashed at times with the State Board of Elections. Do you think the Secretary of State's office should have any more authority than it has right now over running elections in Rhode Island?
I think because the office is a political office, that barrier should remain. And I know that those folks are appointed by politicians, but there is a separation there that I think has to remain to make sure that there's integrity in those elections. You don't want the Secretary of State's office too deeply involved in running elections because there could be the perception that there is political influence in those elections. And especially at this time, we want to avoid that.
In Massachusetts, the Secretary of State is responsible for enforcing public records law, while here in Rhode Island, the Attorney General has that responsibility. Which approach do you think makes more sense?
You know, that's a good question, and I've talked to the Attorney General about that, and I've talked to the Secretary about that. You know, there doesn't seem to be an issue in Rhode Island at this point, and so I would say that we could continue on. I think what works for one state may not work for another. Both of the general officers that I talked about this have varying opinions on it. Obviously, the Attorney General thinks that the system is functioning well as we speak.
What about the argument that some would make that the Attorney General, as the state's chief law enforcement officer, might have a conflict in releasing public records involving police? Peter Nerona's predecessor, Peter Kilmartin, was a longtime Pawtucket police officer. Do you see any conflict there?
I don't. I think that the office is required to act upon the duties of the office, and so I think that's one of the duties, and it should be carried out. I don't know if that's a continuing issue. The Attorney General spoke about that briefly to me when I asked him about that, but I'm not sure that's a daily issue.
Finally, a state legislative redistricting commission is starting work this week on the redrawing of legislative districts. This happens every 10 years after the census. How would you respond to the argument that it's an inherent conflict for state lawmakers to be controlling a process that has a lot of influence on their own future elections and political future?
I would agree with that. I think there should be a neutral body that is given the job to redistrict based on a whole host of measures that we know we can talk about that deal with demographics, that deal with race, that deal with borders. It is a conflict inherently. I think the system as it exists today is better than it was because there is a consultant hired. There are parameters set, but I do believe that there should be a neutral agency that determines redistricting based on the things that I just mentioned.
That's all the time we have, so we need to leave it there. Thank you for joining us, State Representative Greg Amore. He's announcing his 2022 campaign for Rhode Island Secretary of State next Wednesday.
Thank you, Ian.
As usual, you can find a lot more on our website at thepublicsradio.org. I'm Ian Donis.